Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host with the most, Brandon Perkins. Joining me, as always, is Chris Loge, and Patrick Mifflin is with us tonight as well. Say hi,
everybody. I'm actually awake.
Yeah, he's actually awake.
Hello.
Yeah, so this week's episode is for March 30th, 2024. It's the last show of the month. Next time you hear us, it will be into April. And that's definitely going to be busy because there's a lot of shit coming out next month. A bunch of stuff. Almost too much stuff, one would say. But yeah, so amongst some other things, we'll be talking about, well, probably one of the big things you'll be hearing about is the Francis Scott Key Bridge that went down in Baltimore. Basically, a giant container ship crashed into it and pretty much just wrecked the damn thing. And keep in mind,
I've got questions about its placement on the show, but I'll ask those when we get to it.
Yeah. For those who don't know, that bridge is like over 40 years old. And it's one of those, another example is like, yeah, our infrastructure isn't really as strong as it probably should be. But then again, you know, you're also talking about, oh yeah, giant container ship crashing into a bridge. That's probably going to make a few dents.
Yeah, that tends to cause damage.
Yeah. The former chair of the RNC was hired, then fired by NBC in all of the space of a week, if not less. And of course, we've also got some deaths that happened this week. One that is sad and one that is
welcome.
Sad for someone, I'm sure. Maybe. I doubt it. But outside of his immediate family, anyway. And even there, I'm not so sure.
You're being way more charitable than I am.
Yeah. And then we got news about that suit that Elon Musk sent against the Center for Countering Digital Hate. It ended exactly as you thought it would be. And of course, on top of this, we got a bunch of trailers and teasers to talk about, a bunch of entertainment stuff, all that and more on this week's episode of Let's Weekend. So, as always, to start us off, let's start, as we always do, talking about all the shit we've been doing this week up to this point. And as always, as tradition, we start with Chris. Chris, what have you been doing this week?
Been just working and doing stuff.
Yeah.
Nothing really too big. But yeah, managed to watch Poor Things on Hulu.
Yeah.
The new Emma Stone movie.
Yep.
That is a wild trip. It's just...
Oh, yes it is. Yes it is.
Very weird thing.
It is very bizarre.
Yeah, kind of a spin on the Frankenstein's monster kind of story.
Sort of. Kind of. You can definitely see it that way. But then it's like also tied into like this weird sort of steampunk shit as well. Like it's very odd.
Yeah. Not really much going on in that it's like, oh, this is normal. It's a fun thing to watch.
Yeah.
And so that's definitely recommend checking that out.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Also been playing more Balatro. Mm-hmm. Streamed this yesterday. That basically I had four wins and was like, all right, I've unlocked some weird decks that go with that and tried them out and got two wins out of that. So that was a pretty successful outing.
Mm-hmm.
Had one that was good enough where I was getting 1,000 or 1,000,000 chips per hand I was putting down, which once you beat the main ante, the eighth round, you start getting these more exponential goals you need to hit. So did not get too much further after that, but still fun kind of getting something going like that where everything's kind of working together really well. But yeah, getting further than that is a very tough challenge. So, but yeah, that was a very fun time for that. And last one I've been putting some time into, MLB The Show 24.
How is it this year?
Pretty good. They have women now in the Road of the Show mode. So you can play as women, which I made my first one a closer. So I've managed to get through the first season with that. Got traded because I was in the Cleveland Guardians farm system, which they have a very good closer in the majors. Mm-hmm. So they saw fit, I guess, to just get rid of me for whatever reason. Got traded to the Pittsburgh Pirates farm system, who it's not a great team, but I am in spring training essentially for next season. So that'll be fun to kind of see if I get up to the big leagues during the next season with that. And then I saw fit to create another pitcher, a starting pitcher, Peggy Hill.
Cause, sure, why not?
Yeah, I was like, well, I'd like to do some starting pitching because that's a bit of a more fruitful kind of way to do it. Because they have programs tied to that for unlocking more perks and such. So that works out pretty well so far. I have not done too much with her just yet, just to get out of the initial intro stuff with the combine and getting picked by a team, which I'm in the Cleveland Guardians farm system again. Since I pick it, you get to pick which team you want to start with if you want. So I do that and working with that. So that's another fun time. Now they got an Easter event going on this weekend. So looking to play some more and unlock the things that come with that. So that's been pretty much it. So, Pat, what have you been doing?
Yeah, Pat, tell us how you managed to get Master on Street Fighter VI.
Yeah, that is a thing that happened this past week. It probably would have happened sooner, but I've had so much other stuff going on that I haven't really had time to grind in ranked. Mm-hmm. But, I hit Master Rank with E-Honda. Once you hit Diamond 5, it becomes a lot faster because they start pitting you up against the occasional Master Rank player, and you level up a lot faster off of those because wins are just worth more. So, and you're already pretty much playing at that level at that point if you're in Diamond 5, because that's literally one step down from Master. So the points came a lot faster once I got past Diamond 4. And yeah, I'm going to be recording like all of my matches from the last few sessions that built up to me getting Master Rank as just kind of a highlight reel, because these matches and the footage that I'm getting from them and the tech that I'm using to get these wins, it's giving me a nice opportunity to create tech videos and highlight videos that really can be done in the same style as old Street Fighter Guilty Gear combo videos from 20 years ago. And I've already put one of those out there to explain the main stuff that I'm doing to get wins in ranked at that level. I'm going to be doing another one that's just a more generic highlight reel, but will also feature a lot of tech by nature as a result. And it's just giving me a chance to get more experience as a video editor, because the typical news and commentary content that I do for Little Akiba Games doesn't really give me that opportunity to kind of show off my editing skills, my ability to mix music with footage and whatnot. So that's been a lot of fun, and it's been a nice change of pace just compared to what I've usually been doing as far as making videos. And speaking of Little Akiba Games, I'm kind of pissed off right now because, right as I launched the channel, pretty much focused on things like import gaming and Japanese gaming and localization and translation, we start to get this whole new gaming culture war flaring up, and that happens to be wandering into the territory of localization and translation and what have you. But I'm trying to tread lightly with that because I honestly hate both sides of the whole debate. And like on the one side, you have people who are unironically using the word woke and seem to be opposed to ESG as an overarching concept rather than something that's good in theory and not always necessarily in practice.
And I can give you a really good example of that right now. I recently just finished playing Unicorn Overlord like last week.
I've got my copy right here. I haven't even opened it yet, but
okay. So, when the game was first getting previewed up to the point that it was about to get released, there was a bunch of shit about how, you know, complaints about, oh no, they changed all the dialogue and shit. Here's the thing. I've seen all those comparisons, and then I went back to them after I played the game. Mm-hmm. I'm going to be frank with you. The stuff that they did to it, frankly, makes the game far more effective, because the original writing for like the in the Japanese form is very beige, and it doesn't really translate. There's like a lot of like cultural stuff in it that, unless you're a Japanese speaker, you would not recognize what is being trying to be said. So yeah. In turn, what they ended up doing is that they gave it a sort of pseudo-dramatic medieval English approach to it, and it works. It actually works. It gives all the effectiveness that the original, you know, prose from the original game that, you know, works if you can speak Japanese.
Yeah.
I don't speak Japanese, obviously.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with that. Like, as long as the original intent, the original context and everything is intact without anything really added, subtracted, changed to the actual meaning of what's being said, I'm not too bothered by that.
Yeah.
It's when all those liberties are being taken, when that localization job starts being interpreted as editorial or as creative license, and they start playing fast and loose with the actual meaning of what's being said, that's when I start to take exception, because more than anything, I'm a purist. When someone's localizing something, all I want, if I'm putting up my $60, $70, all I want is the language barrier removed.
Yes.
And there are a lot of people in this field right now who are making changes based on their worldview, and they think because that worldview is generally a good place to be coming from, that their shit doesn't stink and they can do whatever they want. That's where they lose me.
Yeah.
So
no, I can totally see that. For the record, I'm just going to say this out loud. I know that the usual suspects are have been desperately trying to turn this into Gamergate 2.0.
It's not. It's negative hype too.
Yeah. And like, it's like the whole thing was doomed to fail, because first of all, Gamergate already happened once, and we already figured out what the warning signs are.
Yeah.
And the moment they tried to use the same tactics, we all immediately could smell the bullshit. So yeah. They're trying desperately, and it's not working. It's not going to take off. Like, we're not in the type of like cultural zeitgeist that kind of allowed Gamergate to fester the way it did.
Yeah. I do think, like, as far as the whole topic of Sweet Baby Ink that's going around right now, again, like I've said this, I don't think ESG is in itself any kind of boogeyman or anything.
Yeah.
But I think it's in this particular case, it's coming from a company that thinks because ESG is generally a good idea, that their shit doesn't stink, and they can go about achieving it is innately justified. And that's where I come around to that negative hype situation, because like if you remember negative hype from 2019 when the Escape from Tarkov developers were going around throwing copyright strikes around on YouTube channels because they didn't like the kind of tone that it was setting about their game, and they thought that that was justifying. So you've got this Steam curation group that is listing games that Sweet Baby Ink is involved in because there are some people that just don't like what it is they're doing. And you have a really high roller, maybe the top roller, I don't remember, from SBI, that was trying to not only get that curation list shut down, but also take away the dude's personal Steam account.
Yeah.
As a result. And that is, I mean, I have zero sympathy for SBI at that point.
Yeah, they kind of pissed away some goodwill with that one.
Yes. And then there's also when they went after RGT just for covering the story.
Yeah.
Who isn't even, like, he isn't even on the right wing side of things. He's just kind of there. He's,
yeah.
He talks about games. He covers games. And this is a valid story that, that needs to be talked about. And they tried to, they tried to shut him down over it.
Yeah.
So,
and unfortunately, then, what they did with that is they fed into the narrative. And now, you know, it's like, you know what I'm saying.
I know exactly.
It's a cycle, and they feed off of each other.
I'm doubly mad at them for doing that, because that technically puts me on the same side as people who are unironically saying the word woke.
Yeah, it makes you on the side of some jackass like the Quartering, and nobody wants to be on his side.
And so, and at the same time, like, what kind of asshole do you have to be to put me on the same side as them?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, but
I haven't done any videos on the topic yet, and I think this segment of the show is kind of tipping my hand a bit as to what any such videos might look like.
Yeah.
But yeah, I don't think I'm going to be able to avoid it much longer, because
it's going to unfortunately happen at some point.
I am going to get dragged into it.
Yeah.
But on a much brighter note, I did see the message from Danrib that the SmashPad review format that we've been doing for got to be close to a decade now,
yeah,
if not longer, is no longer a hard and fast rule. So that relaxation of our review format may bring me back to writing those. It's got my attention. So
yeah, I just stick to it because I'm a creature of habit. So
I understand that.
Yeah. But anyway,
That's been my week.
All right. Well,
good times.
Yeah. So as for me, like I said, I finished Unicorn Overlord, last week. So I've been trying to fill the void, and I've had a bunch of games I've played. I played Wanted Dead, which is a famously kind of janky sort of throwback to old like B tier PS2 action games, but it's a bit more involved. You guys, I know Chris remembers. Patrick, do you remember a game that came out for the Wii a while back called Devil's Third?
Oh, the Wii U game, yeah.
It was an Itagaki vehicle, yeah. Yeah, so a bunch of the dudes who worked at that studio went and formed their own studio, and they made this game.
Okay.
Yeah, and it's really weird to play, because on the one hand, it's very ambitious. But at the same time, its production values are very low, and it sometimes gets in the way of it.
Just an aesthetic, though.
Yeah. But anyway, that's just that was something else. I've actually been playing two other things more than anything else right now. And the first is Dragon's Dogma 2. I played the first Dragon's Dogma way back when it first came out and rather liked it. And this is essentially them going back and it's been a long time since I've played the original Dragon's Dogma. And this version is, I did have certain memories about the first time. First and foremost, the original Dragon's Dogma is actually fairly difficult because, it's a lot more, how can I put this? It's a little bit more involved than your typical like action RPG tends to be. One of the things about like the monster fights in Dragon's Dogma is that a lot of the monsters you come up against, a lot of them have like their own weaknesses, and there's a lot of like getting them into a position where you can do more damage. That includes everything from like jumping off cliffs to hang on top of them so you can stab them in the back of the head, shit like that. And that's still very much a thing here. One of the like first major fights you come up in this game is against a Cyclops who, unless you're not on your game, will end up straight up murdering you very quickly, like in one or two hits. And this is like just at the start of the game.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, but it also might not help that I'm playing as a thief, which means that I'm doing double dagger attacks instead of having a sword and shield.
And extra squishy.
Yeah. But Yeah, there is, like, the original, you know, you have to get, like, a pawn, you know, much like with the original Dragon's Dogma, you're an Arisen who has to get a pawn, and unlike in the original game where the pawns were, like, it almost was like a meme at some point, like, how generic their speech was, the pawns this time around definitely have a lot more personality and intelligence to them. Doesn't mean that their talking can't occasionally get a little repetitive, but you know they still have more personality than they did the first time around. There's the other thing about the game. I will say this. One of the things that honestly kind of scummy on Capcom's part, but also not unheard of for them, is that a lot of people, you know, the original, like, the critics and stuff, you know, they got, you know, early, well, not early, but they got, like, early access and early editions of the game they could play for review. And that's where, like, most of the reviews that you see that, you know, are getting sevens and eights and nines are coming from. And then the game released and Capcom slapped on a bunch of microtransactions.
Yes.
Yeah. For the record, I have not come up to anything that seemed to imply that I needed to get anything from the microtransactions. Then again, I'm not that far into the game where it might come off as necessary. One of the things they supposedly microtransactioned is that is a particular tool that you have to use to establish, like, a fast travel. Now, the thing is, you don't need to, like, have one for every time you fast travel. You just have to have one to use that you can then use to establish that fast travel area that you can access, and then you can fast travel back and forth as much as you want. But it still comes off as kind of scummy because you kind of have to work to find those things. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Otherwise, though, pretty damn good. Like, you know, it's challenging. It's difficult. It's actually a lot of fun. Yeah, so I've been playing that. And the other thing I played and finished last night was the demo for Stellar Blade, which...
What's that? I just haven't had the time.
Okay, so anybody who saw the hype for this game and saw, like, the story and everything, their immediate first thought was, oh, this is just Nier Automata. I mean, and... Not for nothing. There's a lot of aesthetic stuff that is heavily reminiscent of Nier Automata. The fact that you've got a little drone following you around.
Way more stylized, though.
Yeah, the heavy attacks, you know, with the sword. The very obvious one being the fan service.
Which kind of circles back to what I was talking about too, because there's definitely, like, some of the pushback seems to be manifesting itself as frothing support of this game for its fan service.
Yeah, which is a really stupid reason to support a game.
Yeah.
And just, okay, so we'll get back to that and circle back to that in a bit.
I'm sorry. I just saw the connection there.
Yeah, but there's also like the whole humans got invaded, so they had to flee to a colony off world, and now they're having to fight them back on a post-apocalyptic Earth, which is once again straight out of Nier Automata.
Yes.
And there's also like
Not playing as humans.
I actually don't know that yet. The demo doesn't tell you.
Okay.
Yeah.
If human, then extensively modified.
They are. If they are, that has to be because they bleed. Oh my God, do they bleed?
Okay, then.
It is surprisingly gory, like right out of the gate.
So cyborgs, not droids.
If that, really. But as for, like, the actual gameplay, this is not Nier Automata at all. If I would compare it to anything else, it would be something closer to Sekiro.
I'm completely okay with that.
It is very heavy on parrying and, you know, knocking your enemies off balance. You try to just... Yeah, like it's not like that straight off the bat. There are, like, smaller enemies that you can just sort of hack and slash your way through. Without very little trouble, But you try to do that to anything bigger than that, and you will get your ass handed to you very quickly. And yeah, it's a lot more involved version of like Sekiro's combat, where on top of, you know, trying to knock them off balance, there's also dodging involved. There's a lot, there's like a skill tree involved where you're slowly building up more advanced actions you can do. Like one of the ones that the demo does is if like a major enemy is trying to hit you with a fatal attack, it'll like flash blue. And at the same time that your sword will flash blue, and you can use that to like teleport behind them. Stuff like that. There's also like, if you parry enough times, it'll give your, it'll like set up some alternate skills that you can do that'll let you like use some heavier, attacks that'll take off more damage from the bosses. And then, of course, you can get to a certain point where you can then do like an execution maneuver. And all this stuff is like all this stuff that you do. It's ways to get stuff to like, use for points on the skill tree that you get. The game kind of sort of has something similar to like the bonfires or whatever that you get in those kinds of games, but not really. For one thing, you don't like lose a bunch of health if you do that, and you have to like regain it. There's also like no like stamina meter that you have to worry about or anything like that. So it's a slightly more aggressive Sekiro type thing. But as for the fan service, first and foremost, Eve, the character that you play, she does actually have like regular clothes that you can get for her. So it's not, she isn't like that all the time. And it's like fairly regular fashionable stuff, hoodies and blue jeans and stuff like that. So it's not like she's there all the time. Also.
So they're going to pull in the Final Fantasy 14 demographic easily.
Yeah. And well, also the Nier demographic, because one of the things about Nier Automata was that there was a bunch of stuff you could get where you could get, you could get 2Bs, all of her, a bunch of different costumes for her if you wanted. Speaking of which, you've probably seen it a bunch online, the skin suit. Yeah. So did you play Nier Automata at some point?
I didn't finish it, but I played it.
Okay. Do you remember that there was that one feature you could do where you could actually like blast off her skirt so you could just see her ass the whole time?
I do not.
Okay, so that was like a hidden thing that you could do. You could.
I'm guessing there was an achievement for it.
There was an achievement for it, but here's the thing.
How did I know?
Because it's Yoko Taro. What do you think? But here's the thing for it. It took out a huge chunk of your life meter every time you did it, because it's essentially her self-destructing.
Yeah.
The skin suit literally is basically makes you extremely weak and can get you one-shotted very easily in the game.
So it's not even like a glass cannon kind of thing. You don't get any benefit to counteract that.
You could arguably see it as like a challenge.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, it's like it basically just leaves you up for one-shot kills.
Even okay, from so like I thought ability. Maybe it was some kind of glass cannon thing where
no. Mm-mm. She literally has no armor with yeah. that. So like she has no defense. She has no shield while wearing it.
So it's not even an AC negative 10 type of thing.
Nope. But yeah, I'm still going to wait until the game comes out to see how the reviews are. But I mean, the demo pretty much sold me on it. I won't lie. It was a lot more involved than I thought it was going to be. And if this game,
I was impressed with it from the moment it was unveiled, but
yeah,
I kind of had it in that box where it's like, okay, this is a game that I am really impressed with, but will probably just have too much else to buy when it actually hits store shelves. I might actually be able to pick it up.
Yeah. Also the fact that this game was made by Shift Up Corp, which for those you don't know, those are the guys behind Goddess of Victory Nikkei.
Yep.
one of the biggest like gacha games on mobile.
Yeah,
it's them. They're the ones who made it, which is somehow hilarious and yet so very appropriate at the same time. Because on top of that, because Goddess of Victory DK not only also is infamous for this dripping with fan service, it's also famous for the fact that it's got a surprisingly really well-written story mode. But yeah, so other than that, you know, just books, usual. I started reading St. Leibowitz and the Wild Horse Woman, which is like the distant sequel to Canticle for Leibowitz. It was like released like 40 years afterwards, and the author had to actually die for it to happen. And I just started it, so I'm not really that far into it. Mm-hmm. Really just, you know, Easter stuff, more or less.
Nice.
Yeah. Because this is one of those weird years where Easter ended up falling on March. So weird that the calendar works that way. But anyway.
Yes.
So, anybody want to add anything else before we move on from there?
I think I'm good.
All right.
Nope.
All righty then. Well, with that, it is now time for everybody's favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And, you know, Pat's little thing about, you know, the way that, you know, localization sometimes works, especially in anime, reminded me of something. I was going to bring this up at some point because this is just to remind us all of how old we are. Back when we were younger, what was like the big sort of boogeyman for anime localizations? Come on, Pat, you know this one.
Terrible voice acting.
No, I mean like company wise.
Oh, probably 4Kids or Deke.
There we go. There we go. 4Kids Entertainment. They were the ones who more or less gobbled up like all the rights for like the newer Shonen Jump stuff that came out later on, like Yu-Gi-Oh! And like they were the ones who gave us, you know, banishing people to the Shadow Realm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that wasn't a thing in the original.
No,
They were just dead.
Got murked.
Yeah, they were just dead. And they also did Sonic X, and they did Shaman King. Did they do Naruto? Yeah, they did do Naruto, didn't they?
I think they at least were in the conversation.
Yeah, and probably their most infamous atrocity was the One Piece one that they did. That one was infamous for the... Just, oh God, just the shit that they did. And yet, weirdly enough, Soei Isha was apparently completely cool with it.
Oh my God.
Yeah. But that's not who we're talking about today. See, before, you know, those days in the late 90s, early 2000s, when anime was going from like a niche thing to something slightly more mainstream for like children's and teenagers to enjoy, we had older anime stuff. And now, I was not around for a lot of this stuff, but I did watch a bunch of it as reruns on Cartoon Network back in the day. So here's two titles you may have heard of. Here's one, Pat, and Chris, too. You probably remember it. Speed Racer.
Mm-hmm.
Originally called Mach Go 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 over in Japan. Famously known for the dub that it got because they had to, you know, they had to fit so much in... You know, to fit like Japanese lip flaps, they talked really fast like this. Oh, you remember that?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was infamous. It was like a meme even back then. And then there was another one called G-Force, which the older days before that, it was called Battle of the Planets.
Yep. Gatchaman.
Yeah. Science Ninja Team Gatchaman. And that one didn't actually get like a official release like until like freaking God, it probably around a little before like the first Mass Effect came out, because I remember getting it was from ADV, and I remember getting like the first box set of that for Christmas that year.
Yeah, they that series had so many attempts at localization, and they were all named differently.
Mm-hmm. And some of them even created completely new characters.
And I'm sure that Tatsunoko didn't complain about it at all because they got paid every single time.
Yeah. Well, funny you bring up Tatsunoko, because there's one particular instance of when Tatsunoko's properties, you'll note that I use the plural there, ended up getting localized. That localization became extremely popular and ended up causing an incredible amount of freaking legal bullshit that only got, you know, fixed like maybe 7 or 8 years ago. You know what I'm talking about, Pat? A little company called Harmony Gold and a little series called Robotech.
So that's not a corner I venture into that often, so yeah, I was a little bit lost there.
Okay, so Harmony Gold, back in the mid-80s, they went back to Tatsunoko because, once again, you know, Tatsunoko Productions, they had made the already successful, you know, Gatchaman and Speed Racer, and they got really successful on syndication over here in television, super popular. They all got good ratings. They were huge, freaking cultural phenomenons almost. I mean, more Speed Racer than Battle of the Planets. That one kind of only got slightly popular because of Star Wars, you know. But, yeah, so back in the early 80s, there was a guy who joined up with Tatsunoko Productions. His name was Noboru Ishiguro. And, yes, so, well, no, actually it was not Noboru Ishiguro. It was Shoji Kawamori. That's my fault. Shoji Kawamori was a animator and screenwriter and visual artist who sort of made his niche as a mecha designer. He originally started out working on space battleship Yamato way back in the 70s before. And that series, of course, became a huge hit. So he was eventually given, you know, carte de blanche to go ahead and do one of his own projects. And he came up with this idea of, like, he decided to combine the two most popular things that were happening in Japanese pop culture at the time, which was giant robots and J-pop idols.
Yeah.
And with that, he came up with an anime, an incredibly popular anime, and I'm not joking. This one was massively popular over there.
Oh, yeah.
Called Super Dimension Fortress Macross.
Yes.
And it came out in 1982. It was an almost immediate freaking hit. It ended up being, it was super duper freaking successful. I mean, it's created a lot of tropes that we associate now with a lot of anime now, that it's, you know, kind of existed, but didn't really in quite the position it does now. But that's, you know, that's something else. And it wasn't like the first of that period that he created for Tatsunoko that was super popular either. He also, well, there was another series that came out later called Super Dimension Cavalry Southern Cross. And let's see, I want to make sure, because I'm not sure if Shoji Kawamori actually made that one too. He might have only done the Macross stuff.
I haven't even heard of that last one.
Well, it's going to come. It's going to be important in a minute, and I'll tell you why.
Did they rename it in a localization, or?
Well, I'm going to tell you in a minute, but okay. I have to get through all of this first. Okay, so it doesn't look like he was part of that particular production, but the one, like, a lot of the production crew for Macross was, and, you know, Tatsunoko has a tendency to, like, sort of redo a lot of formula for their type of stuff back in the day. So they were trying to make a different kind of another one, but of a different story and a different type. And then a little bit later, they had another one that was created by a guy named Shinji Aramaki.
That's a name that rings a bell.
Yeah, he's done a bunch of stuff. He definitely was one of the main mechanical designers on Transformers. He also worked as a mechanical designer on Bubblegum Crisis, Megazone 23. A bunch of stuff. He worked on S. Cryed.
There it is.
Digimon Tamers, a little work on Witch Hunter Robin, and some stuff on Wolf's Rain. But Yeah, and again, it was, you know, adventure. It was a, so you're thinking, okay, so you've got these three different stories, all these three different anime series. They're all visually original and distinct, but they're visually similar because all of them, again, were made by Tatsunoko Productions, and all a lot of them involve like vaguely military mecha-ish stuff. So what does Harmony Gold do? They say, screw it. Let's take all three of them and put them under one single moniker. And that's what Robotech was.
Yep.
So prior to the release of the TV series, it was the name Robotech was used by a model kit manufacturer, Revell, on their a line that was called, it was, they had a line of models called the Robotech Defenders. And basically they consisted of like a bunch of model kits imported from Japan and featuring like anime, like again, Macross, Super Dimension, Century Orgas, Fang of the Sun, Dugram, you know, stuff from like the early, late 70s, early 80s. And supposedly there was supposed to be like a marketing tie-in with DC Comics that didn't last but like two issues. And right around 1984, Harmony Gold started licensing the Macross TV series for the then new, relatively new field of direct-to-video distribution. Because remember, this is the early 80s, VHS was relatively a new thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so a lot of these guys were trying to get onto it. And their merchandising plans ended up being compromised by Revell's prior distribution of the Macross kits. So suddenly, you have this thing where it's like, okay, we're trying to get this out, but this other group seems to have their fingers in the property. What the hell are we going to do? Well, they ended up signing a co-licensing agreement, which just ends a third finger into the pie. So as you can imagine, this is where a lot of that legal shit comes up later on.
Yeah, it's already a huge mess.
And so they adopted the Robotech name for the TV syndication of Macross. And essentially what they did is they created this sort of this fictional chronology. The first original Robotech series that happened in 1984, that's the Macross saga, you know, based on Super, because literally it was Macross, the anime, is roughly 1999 to 2014. Remember, this was back in the 80s. So 1999 was still like a ways off. And in modern times, though, they officially switched it to like 2009. There's all, then they do Robotech the Masters. That's the other one, the Southern Cross one I talked about. That one supposedly takes place between 2029 and 2030. And then there's Robotech the New Generation. That came out in 1985. That's the Mospedia stuff I told you about. And supposedly that is 2042 to 2044. Every single one of these, remember, every single one of these, like, feature, you know, like, completely different characters and all of that. And essentially, the idea is that all of these stories span, like, three different generations, and they all are fighting over something called robotechnology, which is this these scientific advances that were supposedly discovered in an alien starship that crashes on the south on a South Pacific island, which is how they were able to sort of link all of these together. And what happens is that over the succeeding generations, they have what are called the first, second, and third Robotech Wars. And of course, these are still largely more or less the same characters, but they're all renamed. A lot of them are given slightly different, you know, motives for why they're involved in the first place. There was also a feature film that used footage from the first part of Megazone 23, and that combined it with scenes from Southern Cross and some additional original animation that was produced specifically for the film. There was also a aborted American-produced series called Robotech 2: The Sentinels. There was a new sequel film that was going to be that was made called The Shadow Chronicles. Came out in 2006. Then there was a direct-to-video animated film produced in 2013 called Love Live at Live that came out then. And this is where all the crazy shit happens. Right around the time that the late 90s, early 2000s happens, when, you know, as DVDs were starting to become a more gradually a more, you know, a more accepted form, and DVD players started to spread, there then started a new market for, you know, anime DVDs that previously did not exist, mostly due to the fact that DVDs can hold more film than your average VHS tape could. So suddenly they could put a bunch more episodes on a single disc. This was also, so right around this time, people started like, hey, you know, it started to become more common knowledge that the Robotech series was originally just cobbled together from three different anime series. So people started like clamoring for the original series. We want to see the original series, want to see them in their original context. But because Harmony Gold basically stuck hard to this license agreement that they, in some ways, they could not break, because again, they made it originally with Revell as like a way to sort of do this stuff. They essentially had all these like legal hurdles that would have to go. Eventually, it ended up with Soji Kawamori and Tatsunoko Productions suing Harmony Gold. Harmony Gold then in turn suing back, and then Revell would get involved. And eventually, it would not be... It would take years until all the crazy right shit that was involved with this stuff would actually end up getting fixed. Let's see. It wasn't until like I think around 2011 that they were finally able to like release an unexpurgated form of Macross in the US with an official English dub. And yeah, it took forever because all of this weird, just bizarre legal shit that happened through it. And it's weird that, you know, weirdly enough, Robotech has like this enormous fan base to it that would not exist. And a lot of people were exposed to like the concept of like mecha and stuff like that through this series. And yet because of that, it sort of created this false idea of like what this series was like for a lot of people. Especially because the Robotech stuff almost leaves out a lot of like the pop idol stuff from the original. Because that's like the whole thing with the Macross series, is that J-pop idols are supposed to be the future, and they're like a weapon that we use against.
Yeah, it's very intertwined.
Yeah. But yeah, that's Robotech. It was legit one of the first anime series over here that became like a massive cultural phenomenon, where there was like toys and comic books and all this stuff related to it. And it took forever for us to ever get anything related to it here in the U.S. that's unexpurgated. And that's been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. So, yeah, with that, it's now time to move on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first assholes of the week, over in Baltimore, they have the Francis Scott Key Bridge. Well, they had. The Francis Scott Key Bridge, because that bridge collapsed after a giant container ship ended up crashing into it. Clear it, and it's going to take weeks to clear the channel.
Yeah.
We now know more or less what caused it. Apparently, there seems to have been some electrical issues on the ship that caused it to crash into it. And there's just a bunch of like random bullshit that got thrown into it under the story, because there was just a bunch of really cynical people who wanted to throw random shit into the pot to see what would stick, like right off the bat.
Oh yeah, lots of conspiracy theories that
yeah
come from culture war shit, because there's a lot of people like, oh, DEI caused this. And it's like, no, it didn't.
No, but this isn't even an American company that.
Yeah, you know, people were insulting the mayor, calling him a DEI mayor, even though
he was like actually elected
with like 70%+ of the vote, so he was incredibly popular.
Yeah. And
even he put out a statement like talking about how dumb those people were, but in a much more eloquent way than they deserved. But yeah, because there is, you know, 9/11 type stuff with the government did it and all this and, you know, all that. That's just ridiculous. But the main issue is this container ship was leaving the bay, and they had power issues that knocked out the power for their steering and all that. At least a few times they managed to get a call out in there to warn the port what was going on, and they managed to clear out the bridge as much as they could. I believe like 9 people I think went down with it. So they managed to rescue 3, and they believe 6 are unaccounted for. They're probably dead at this point, but they're trying to find the bodies so they can identify who it is. So yeah, this happened like in the middle of the night, like 12, 1 a.m., something like that.
Yeah, I was up when it happened. I was shocked when I got the news alert on my phone.
Yeah. And it's the scale of this ship is just hard to comprehend, because it's...
Well, it's a cargo ship. Those things are by nature extremely huge.
Yeah, they have thousands of containers on them. And yeah, once they get going, they're incredibly hard to slow down, especially when you're dealing with a smaller kind of bay here that there's not a ton of room for. And yeah, it just hits the one of the concrete pillars, and the thing just crumples like it's made out of, you know, wire instead of, you know, tons of steel.
Yeah.
Kind of thing. And yeah, this ship, unfortunately, had this big accident, and yeah, the ship's still there. Most of the bridge is still hanging off of it, and others collapsed in the river. So I believe they have a big whatever there to start trying to pull out the pieces and clear it out. So there are a number of ships that are going to be stranded there for a while in the bay, and others that were hoping to get in. So a lot of like European products are going to be delayed a good bit. So yeah, this is going to be a huge problem for a while, at least on the west, the east coast here.
Yep.
I'm sure a lot are going to make deals to get their stuff to other ports along the eastern coast, around New York and all that. So yeah, this is going to cause a lot of problems. And of course, Elon shows up today. Let me see if I can find the specific things that he said. First, he just posts his dumbass thing of like, do you think the Baltimore Bridge collapse was an accident or intentional? And it's like,
why?
Yeah.
What would anyone gain out of that?
Yeah.
So that's where I kind of come in and was asking, like, why is this the asshole of the week thing anyway? Because, like, I was following it as it happened with one of my friends, and the immediate understanding seemed to be that no one was the asshole here. This is just a shitty situation where everything went wrong. There was a power outage. The ship went off course. The ships are heavy, and they tend to do damage to structures when they strike them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's created a shitty situation where it's become part of the culture war.
Yeah,
that's going on in politics, and it's the thing that makes it even worse.
For yeah,
all this,
and especially when they try to bring like immigration into it, because there's 7 men that are dead, and every single one of them were immigrants.
Oh, jeez. Yeah.
Yeah,
and yeah, people that worked at the port, that kind of stuff. So, and Elon also strolled in and said like, if you reuse the truss steel that fell, it could be functioning in 3 to 6 months. The repairs should be put to commercial bid with a massive incentive for early and safe completion.
Isn't that bridge like over 40 years old?
Yeah, and it's also, you don't build things that quickly.
Yeah.
To ensure they're safe.
Mm-hmm.
There's that triangle that people talk about, like fast, cheap, and safe, and it's, you only get two of them.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, they're not gonna rush this.
Mm-hmm.
They're gonna want it done right, and now they have opportunities to improve things a bit, try to keep people or keep big ships like this from hopefully taking it down again.
Mm-hmm.
Though the amount of force that the ship has is kind of,
well, I mean, considering the size of it, I mean, it could have been going at it at like an absolute slowest of snail's paces, and it still would have took this thing out. You've got that much weight moving on water, which water doesn't really have a lot of pull to it.
No.
You know.
And shipping containers or container ships are heavy, and they swing with a lot of force.
Yeah. This is, you know, like Isaac Newton taught us this shit. This is basic. But, yeah, so unfortunately, the channel will take weeks to clear out all the debris. It's going to take a while.
Things will be okay.
Yeah.
The only things that are affected is capitalism.
Yeah.
But I'm sure they're going to blame it on Biden. Like, people, the RNC is already being like, why isn't he visited yet? It's like, because he's not needed there.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't like when Trump went to Puerto Rico and threw toilet paper and paper towels at people.
Yeah.
If only there was an infrastructure investment bill that would likely help cover a lot of this.
Mm. Yeah. I wonder. Anyway, our next ass out of the week is Sam Bankman Fried. He's been sentenced to 25 years in prison for fraud charges.
Yeah, because he's a huge criminal for what he's done here.
He's a frauding fraudster who did fraud.
Yes.
Yeah. And yeah, let's see. He's convicted of 7 counts of fraud over the collapse of the FTX crypto exchange he founded and was once seen as a key player in the world of finance.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. In delivering his sentence, Judge Lewis Kaplan cautioned that Bankman-Fried will be in a position to do something very bad in the future. And it's not a trivial risk. He also chided Bankman-Fried for not showing remorse,
mm-hmm.
Which is not a huge surprise. These kind of people very much act like they didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, he is. He did apologize in court for the collapse of FTX, although he did not admit fault.
Mm.
Prosecutors had asked for 40 to 50 years in prison.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Bankman-Fried's lawyers asked for far less. The lawyers estimated that he could potentially serve as little as 12 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Good riddance, this guy.
Yeah, throw him.
Stole a bunch of people's money.
Yep. So, yeah. And then there's this whole story that happened that was just weird. So, NBC hired Ronna McDaniel. She was the former chairperson of the Republican National Committee. Then they said she wouldn't be on air after employees complained, and then they dropped her entirely after outcry succeeds. And this all happened in the span of like 3 days.
Yeah, that she was supposedly getting paid $300,000 to be an on-air, contributor for NBC and MSNBC, and then people were like, why the fuck are we taking this person on after all the bullshit she's done as part of the RNC? As the head of the RNC as well.
Hoping it was going to go the same way that the hiring of Michael Steele went, which actually went very well, but they held the same position, but they are two very different political figures.
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah. So they started getting some backlash, especially from people working at NBC, and they were like, well, we're just not going to have her on TV. She might be doing stuff behind the scenes or whatever. And then we're like, well, she's not going to do anything. And then just dropped her. And it's like, man, it'd be amazing to get paid $300,000 for doing nothing for this. But yeah, I assume she still gets to keep that money, but, you know.
Yeah.
She doesn't get to keep being a mouthpiece and have her reputation, you know, laundered by NBC.
Yeah. And last in this little series, former President Donald J. Trump is selling $60 God Bless the USA Bibles.
Yeah.
So many things wrong with this.
Yeah.
There are layers upon layers upon layers.
Yeah. It is very easy to get a Bible in the United States. Extremely easy. They literally give them away.
Yeah.
And I'm not even necessarily talking about, like, just regular, like, cheap paperback Bibles. I mean, like, leather-bound ones that are specifically made for you with your name gold embalmed on it.
Yep.
There's the fact that on top of the original Old and New Testament, he's also including the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and the Bill of Rights in the back of this thing.
Yeah, it also has a big American flag on the front of it.
And then there's the fact that he's selling it for $60 frickin'.
Yeah. Pretty much the whole part of the evangelical movement that he wants to serve here.
Yeah.
As, you know, they don't really care about the Christianity as a religion thing. They just use that as a shield for their politics here. And that's what Trump likes about it. You know, like when he got asked about his favorite verse in the Bible, and he was like, oh, it's very personal to me. I can't share it. You know, I'm not going to share anything there.
Yeah.
Even asking, like, what do you like better, the Old or the New Testament? He's like, oh, I like them both. And it's like, that's what somebody that hasn't read it wouldn't say. Would not want to, like, anger anybody, make any sort of statement and, you know, about a thing he doesn't know anything about. So yeah, the FAQ section on the Bible's website says no profits will go to Trump's reelection campaign, even though Trump is listed as the manager, president, secretary, and treasurer of CIC Ventures that is behind this. So yeah, there's that. And yeah, this is all like a partnership with what's his name? Lee Greenwald? What's his name? That made the song?
Greenwood.
Yeah, Greenwood, yeah. It's all partnership with him. But sure, why not?
Is that one group of people just cannot, just I swear, but anyway. Fortunately, it's not all terrible. We do have our hero of the week, and we found out this week the next U.S. census will have new race ethnicity options for MENA and Hispanic and Latino people. That's Middle Eastern, North African.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so there'll be 7 options. American Indian or Alaska Native, Asian, Black or African American, Hispanic or Latino, Middle Eastern or North African, Native Hawaiian or Pacific Islander, and white, with further, you know, options below that, for that. So yeah, kind of allows for there to be more data for the census when divvying up, districts and all that for, the different, groups that are, all over this country. So always good to have more of that stuff.
Yeah, definitely. But yeah, so that's actually really cool. Oh yeah, and cheeseburger Doritos are back.
Yes.
Yeah.
Been waiting over a decade for it.
Everything comes back eventually.
Yes. Thankfully, Smith's, which is my area's Kroger branch, had them on sale for like $2.25 a bag if you bought 4 or more.
Oh, yeah.
So that was a big part of my latest grocery order.
Honey. Yeah, I've always been partial to the spicy sweet ones, but that's just me.
Yeah. And that's definitely still a thing.
Oh, yeah. But, yeah. So from that, we move on from the show proper to the proper show proper. And first thing is tonight, Joe Lieberman is dead.
Good.
Yeah.
There are just so many reasons we can, you know, how much do we detest thee? Let us count the ways.
Yeah. he's the reason that there's no public option in the ACA.
Yep, specifically him. It's literally like it literally came down to one guy, and he was the guy.
Yeah,
like that. There's no other way to put that. It was him.
Went against his own party's legislation.
Mm-hmm. The fact that he was an extremely enthusiastic supporter of the Iraq War.
Yeah.
Let's see. Where do we go from here? Well, I mean, I could bring up the gaming thing, considering he was one of the guys that he's one of the reasons the ESRB is a thing, but...
Yep. On that note, has Herb Kohl croaked yet?
You know what? Let me check. I actually do not know. Let me check. Yeah, he died last year.
Good.
Yeah.
And his most recent impact on the politics here in the U.S. is being a founding chairman of the No Labels centrist group.
Yeah.
That's trying to get Trump into power, essentially.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he is gone.
Yeah.
But then there's somebody that actually is sad that we see him go, and that is the actor Gossett Jr.
Yeah.
He passed away this week at the age of, I think it was 83, 87.
87.
Yeah.
Yeah, and he was the first black man to win Best Supporting Actor in the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
An Officer and a Gentleman.
Yep.
There, and... Yeah, got nominated a number of times for Roots and some of his other work for Emmys and such. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, very big actor.
Yeah, an important one, too.
Yeah.
With having a major impact. So, yeah, sad that he's gone, but him we can actually mourn. Other guy, not so much.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so with that, we're moving on to the rest of the stories. And the big one we got here is... CEO of Boeing, Dave Calhoun, Oh, yeah. I forgot about that one. Yeah. And so did pretty much everyone else. Here. Yeah. RFK Jr. has made his pick for vice president known. It's Nicole Shanahan, who is a... You do it, Chris.
She's essentially nobody as far as anybody needs to care about this.
Yeah.
She is, I believe, a lawyer who has worked for various organizations. But if you want to know how she ties into RFK's like anti-vaccine bullshit, she's very much against in vitro fertilization and all that kind of stuff. So she's into conspiracy theories. So perfect for his bullshit there.
Yeah.
And that's about as much as you really need to know.
Yeah, pretty much. I think she also has like a side company of where people pay money to like play with slime. I don't know. It's stupid. But then we go on to a honestly much more important story. The CEO of Boeing, Dave Calhoun, has stepped down for obvious reasons.
Yeah, they have fucked up massively over the last several years and led to just parts of their planes falling apart in the sky with the door plug being the big one a few months ago, but they had the recent one where just a random panel fell off and they don't know exactly like where it happened or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
Luckily nobody's been seriously injured in these recent ones though. Theirs have their MAX line has been involved in crashes a few years ago that killed hundreds of people.
Yep.
Mostly because when they had a big merger with another company about like 20 some years ago.
Yep.
They let the money people run the whole thing and not engineers who were dedicated to, you know, making quality, safe planes.
Yeah. John Oliver actually did a, John Oliver did a whole segment of this on his show a couple weeks ago. You should watch it. It's actually like legitimately fascinating because it's like it's very few times when you can see an event like this and point to like, yeah, this is the exact moment everything goes wrong. And it's like 1996 when they announce you know, the merger between Boeing and this other company.
It's the exact example that shows you why money people should not be running tech companies.
Mm-hmm.
Because they do not give a shit about the actual products they make.
Mm-hmm.
They're just a means with which to make money.
Yep. Yeah, so that happened, and it was really stupid. Speaking of stupid, Elon Musk's lawsuit against the Center for Countering Digital Hate has been dismissed because it was really stupid.
Yeah.
Like, this one was never going to succeed.
Yeah. The judge says the organization's reports on the platform, mm-hmm. formerly known as Twitter, were protected by the First Amendment.
Yeah.
He wrote, Musk's suit is so unabashedly and vociferously about one thing that there can be no mistaking that purpose.
Mm-hmm.
This case is about punishing the defendants for their speech. Basically a slap lawsuit. So.
Yep. And so, yeah. I mean,
it's proceeded for the last year to prove them right.
Yep.
Going all in on Nazi speech on his site.
Going so far as to try and hide the real name of a rather infamous neo-Nazi cartoonist.
Yeah.
Whose stuff you've definitely seen get thrown around on social media. And then it turns out he's like this Puerto Rican nerd.
Yeah.
Whose real name is Hans Christian Graber. What are you going to do about it, Elon? I said it. But, yeah, so that happened. And then there was this story. And this one, in some ways, it kind of came out of the blue. But there have been people who have been talking about this shit for years. The feds raided two of Sean P. Diddy's homes. They raided some of P. Diddy's houses.
Yeah.
Yeah, and this isn't for, like, some minor shit either. We're talking some serious freaking charges here. And it not only involves him, it also implicates a couple of other famous people as well.
Yeah. Yeah, one in L.A., one in Miami.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know that we have any details specifically what they were looking for, but it probably involves, saying it potentially is related to a lawsuit that alleges that he was the leader of a criminal enterprise that could qualify as a widespread and dangerous criminal sex trafficking organization.
Mm-hmm.
To which then people are like talking about Cat Williams with his whole talk with, I think it was Shannon Sharp,
mm-hmm.
Where he went on talking about Sean Combs,
mm-hmm.
and some things like that. And then people uplift him. And then he, like, a week later is talking about his transphobia, basically,
mm-hmm.
and how much he thinks, what he thinks about that. And I'll just say, you don't need to look it up. It's awful.
Yeah. You should know that Cat Williams is legitimately off the rails. Like, and he has been for a long time. Like, it's not even subtle. He's been crazy for a long time. This is just the one point where he actually managed to land on a target.
Yeah.
On top of, you know, Diddy himself, implicates like Cuba Gooding Jr. The guy who's like bringing this major suit is like, he apparently implicates him in like having not necessarily consensual sexual intercourse. All this other shit. It's just, it's really gross.
Yeah.
The actual like legal thing for this is like 75 pages long. It's
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, there's a lot of shit involved. There's sex trafficking, there's assault, there's possible, you know, murder for hire charges. Now people are starting to wonder if he actually ordered the hit on on Biggie Smalls, which, yeah, I could see it happening. But I'm like, you know, this is, you know, like the whole Bad Boy label basically made its whole image on the like sort of decadent, super rich, you know, look. And it's like, and you assume these are good people. But yeah. But anyway, we're going to move on from there onto the entertainment portion of the show. And the first part of that is Hulu on Disney Plus is now officially available. So If you like Hulu stuff, you can now watch it on Disney Plus.
Yeah, at least a lot of it.
Mm-hmm.
At least all the Disney stuff, not the
other
people, other services stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, you can check out Shogun and I assume What We Do in the Shadows and all that kind of stuff. So,
yep.
That's all really good. So,
oh, yeah.
Or worth checking out.
Mm-hmm. And we also have got a official trailer for Hulu's new show, Under the Bridge.
Yeah, this looks pretty interesting based on Rebecca Godfrey's book about the 1997 true story of 14-year-old Rena Virk, who went to join friends at a party and never returned.
Yep.
Which, I don't know. It seems like it goes a little fantastical because there's this whole thing about a bridge.
Mm-hmm.
As the title suggests, there's something under the bridge.
Yeah.
It's all tied to, obviously.
Yeah.
But yeah, looks pretty neat.
Yeah.
That'll be out, when is that going to be? Later this year, at least. I don't think there's a date yet. No, it doesn't look like it.
Yeah.
But it has Lily Gladstone in it. It was in... Oh, whatever that movie was last year, the Leo DiCaprio movie.
Yeah.
So she's got some more cool stuff going on.
Mm-hmm. Then we got an official trailer for Netflix's Unfrosted. This is a directorial work by Jerry Seinfeld that he also stars in. It's ostensibly about the birth of Frosted Flakes, but it's mostly like a really crazy comedy.
Yeah, it's about the creation of Pop-Tarts.
Yeah.
But it's very satirical.
Oh, yeah.
As, it's about the war between Kellogg and Post in Michigan. And, they have some wild stuff going on where they're like, oh, we got, Chef Boyardee on our side.
Yeah.
And they're like, we got the Keebler Elves and all this shit. It's like,
We got the Keebler Elves. We got Tony the Tiger.
We got the Quaker Oats guy.
Yep.
All that kind of stuff. So, yeah, it's
pretty
ridiculous. Looks like it could be pretty fun.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's funny, it's funny they bring in Chef Boyardee because Chef Boyardee was an actual person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they got a bunch of, like, SNL and other comedic actors in this for that. So, yeah, this is Jerry Seinfeld's directorial debut.
Yep.
For the most important story he could find.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah,
because let's be honest, this is Jerry Seinfeld. This is basically his wheelhouse. What is the deal with Pop-Tarts?
Yeah,
that's the movie.
Yeah, that's the first comment I see here. The entire movie is just Jerry making a "What's the deal with Pop-Tarts" joke.
Mm-hmm. And then we got an official trailer for Bad Boys: Ride or Die.
Yeah, they're making another one of those.
Did not have that on my bingo card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the fourth one of these. So, yeah, that'll be out June 7th.
Mm-hmm.
Looks ridiculous. Basically, the plot seems to be their police chief has been killed and supposedly implicated in a big drug scheme, but they get a video of him, like his video will, being like, I didn't do anything, if they're trying to frame me for anything. Mm-hmm. So you guys need to clear my name, and they go out and do a bunch of shit. So, yeah, more fun with that kind of stuff. So, yeah.
It's basically Will Smith and Martin Lawrence making things blow up.
Yes.
Yeah.
Part four. But, yeah, so that's happening. And last but not least, we got a teaser trailer for Kinds of Kindness.
Yeah, the new movie from... what's his name here? It's Lanthimos.
Mm-hmm.
Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yeah.
Another movie with him and Emma Stone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it looks more action-oriented here.
Yeah.
He's done in the past, but... Yeah, the description here is more descriptive than what you see in the trailer.
Mm-hmm.
The trailer's just a bunch of random stuff.
Yeah. We know Willem Dafoe's in it.
Yeah. A triptych fable following a man without choice tries to take control of his own life. A policeman who is alarmed that his wife, who is missing at sea, has returned and seems a different person, and a woman determined to find a specific someone with a specific ability who is destined to become a prodigious spiritual leader.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, it has Emma Stone, Jesse Plemons, Willem Dafoe, Margaret Qualley, Hong Chow, Joe mm-hmm. Alwyn, Amadou Athey, and Hunter Schafer.
Yep.
So just gets a bunch of big names to do some weird stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That looks neat. That's
out
June 21st.
Yeah. And with that, I do believe we've got ourselves a show. Yes, I do. We do. We have ourselves a show. So
glad I could make it to one of these again.
Yeah, good. Hopefully you'll make it to the next one.
Here's hoping.
Yeah. But so I'd like to remind all of our listeners, you got a question, comment, or something you want to read on the air, you can get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. You got it there, right there in the show notes for you to click on. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or basically any kind of podcast aggregator you could think of. You know, and if we're not on there, or you find one that doesn't have us on there, or one that's just brand new, just wait a little bit. We'll be on there eventually. We're about as inevitable as, you know, another MCU movie. But yeah, so with that, we're going to go ahead and wind it down here. Thanks once again, Chris and Patrick, for joining me on this little excursion. If you have liked what you heard, please do not hesitate to share us with your friends, your family, your coworkers, your casual acquaintances, your mortal enemies, and everywhere in between, because they may hate you, but they may end up liking us, and we're not in the splash zone, so why the hell should we care?
We'll take what we can get.
Yeah, we are desperate. But we're going to go ahead and wind it down there. Join us next week. And yeah, hopefully next week we won't have another couple of shit where infrastructure finally just breaks down. You know, again.
Those boats do hit hard, though.
Yeah, and I always end up disappointing myself, so we'll see. Bye, everybody.